Welcome to part two of our conversation with Eric Vitale about dealing with demons. Let me ask you this, because this is an interesting way of thinking about this, or putting this perspective out there. And this is all obviously just conjecture. It's opinion. Sure. But I love to hear, you know, someone who's into this, who's been on many investigations, you know, what, you know, where your experience leads you to think, you know, this may go. When you have a case that is demonic and you're able to use holy water, you're able to use relics and things like that and make a dent with them, because clearly it's an opposing force. It doesn't like those things.
Yes.
You have that sort of case, and let's say, you know, this works. This actually got this thing to either tone itself down or get the hell out of the place that is being investigated. Compare that to a case where you have an earthbound spirit. Let's say it's an abusive husband or grandparent or something that was a real pissy individual that really wasn't that great in life, but is dead and is still there. But they don't give a shit about your holy water or your relics. They don't, that doesn't matter to them. And they're not the type that are going to leave by suggestion either, of just the, hey, let's live, happy cohabitating lives. Just don't scare me, which does seem to work quite a bit, but they're not that either. They're just the asshole that is still an asshole. What do you do in a case like that? Because I would almost look at that from a distance and go, well, it seems like you could probably get the demon out easier, because there's at least a defined line of what they will be able to withstand. But when you just have, you know, old asshole Uncle Larry, nothing got to him, and it doesn't seem to in death either. What's more difficult to exercise?
It's tough, because a lot of times these earthbound spirits, they'll feel so attached still to their home.
Yeah.
You know, and they won't want to leave. Like, they could be working on a project in their home, fixing their car or something, and then, you know, they drop dead of a heart attack, and they just don't want to leave.
Sure.
They have to have, like, they have to have the will to want to cross over. A lot of times they just don't want to leave, or they feel guilty and they feel like they can't be accepted to cross over to the other side. So, I mean, it's a tough one. Sometimes they're quick, easy fixes, and sometimes you just have to, unfortunately, learn to live with this.
Yeah.
And they just want to hang around still and be around their personal belongings still. You know, it's their home and people are still living there. They still have family. And they just want to stay there, and they don't want to cross over.
Sure. Would that be more difficult to someone to try and get that to leave a home than just some weak, dark spirits that's not like super powerful?
I'd rather deal with an earthbound spirit than a demon.
Okay.
Well, I mean, with the demonic spirits, I mean, they'll infiltrate, they'll mess with you psychologically. I mean, And you could feel it. I mean, you could, I always say the best way to describe it for me personally, when, you know, I've been in the presence of a demonic entity. That's, I believe I have been a few times over the course of 7 years or so investigating. And, it feels like, I mean, my worst fear is like snakes and alligators, like creepy reptiles. And I just feel like they're all coming at me to tear me apart, almost like you're in open water. You're about to get eaten alive by sharks. You could feel it. It's incredible fear. It's scary. And then they feed off that to create a stronger manifestation. And it's like a back and forth. There's, you know, you could feel it. You're scared. You're letting out all this energy, and they're feeding off that. And they're being able to create a stronger manifestation because of the fear that you have. I'd much rather deal with an earthbound spirit than a demonic spirit. But at the same time, we are thrill seekers doing this type of work. I don't care what anybody says. It's definitely thrill seeking to be an investigator. But what's most important to me, I want to say this, I want to get substantial evidence to validate the claims of my clients. I'm not just out there running around looking for ghosts. Oh, check out this awesome shot I got. Look at, you know, it's great and all, but I want to help people.
Exactly.
That's what's most important to me, is to help people.
you had said something had happened to you in New Jersey on an investigation that you believe kind of attached to you. Why don't you expound upon that and tell me that story?
Sure. All right. So New Jersey, I grew up in a town called Rochelle Park, and there's a town over to me. It's more like a city. It's called Hackensack, New Jersey. And there are these woods there called Borg's Woods. And we had heard of some ghost stories throughout the years of this place. So I kind of like lay dormant in the dark recesses of my mind. And as I was older, I was like, oh, those woods, we should go investigate and see what's going on. So we started like digging into the history and just seeing, you know, what we could find out. So we had gone and we started investigating. And man, I must have investigated those woods like 30 times. Every time I had gone, I went with my friend Sean Austin. But so what started all of this, we were there one night, and it was Sean and myself and two girls. And what happened was we were doing a spirit box session, and a voice had come out of the spirit box, and it said, "Gonna make you sick." And these two girls that we were with, they had their backs towards us, because they were afraid to have their backs towards the open woods. So Sean and I are standing there doing a spirit box session in front of like this hut, which was really creepy looking, and kind of like trees had fallen down. It looked like a little makeshift hut. God knows what had gone on in there. And behind us, the girls had their backs towards us looking into the woods. And after the voice had said, "Gonna make you sick," I remember I turned around and I'm looking at them, and this one girl, it almost looked like her eyes started to roll in the back of her head, and she was like shaking a little bit, and both of these girls started vomiting. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is happening right now? Like on cue, like horror movie, like they just started vomiting, and we ran them both out of the woods, blessed them with holy water. And I was really pissed off. I was really upset. One of these girls was my girlfriend at the time, and I got really overprotective, and I had gone back by myself, which probably wasn't a good idea, like maybe a couple of days later. And I went into those woods and I set up all my equipment and I started asking questions, and I had my full spectrum camera set up, and I asked, you know, is there a demonic spirit in these woods? Tell me right now. And a voice had come out and said, "Satan." And I stood up and I took out my holy water and I started throwing holy water all over the area. I started reciting the St. Michael prayer. I said, "Whatever's in these woods, you stay here. You're not allowed to hurt anyone anymore." And then I started to get that feeling I feel when I know something demonic is close to me. So I threw my equipment in my bag and I hightailed it out of there. And then for the rest of the day, I really didn't feel good. Looking back now, I think this thing might have been oppressing me. Now, a couple of days later, I had, you know, I would sleep a lot during the day because I worked third shift. I would work all night. So I was sleeping during the day, and I woke up. It was like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. I woke up and I had huge slash marks against right across the left side of my neck. So that led me to believe this thing was pissed. It followed me home. It scratched me. And then, I mean, there's so many things that happened with this case. We had gone back. Like I said, we went to these woods like 30 times. We just kept going back and investigating and trying to get more answers. And one time we had gone there later at night. This was actually more frightening than the scratches appearing on my neck. I was laying in bed one night, and something shook my bed, and I heard a voice say blood, and it felt like it came from inside my body. Now, I know demonic entities can telepathically project words to you into your mind, and it felt like it. I mean, it was so loud, and it sounded like it came from inside of my body. And I just remember I sat up and I threw holy water around my room and I said some prayers. But Borg's Woods, that thing is my buddy Sean Austin. He's got psychic abilities, and he believes that it is a demonic entity that has a pig face, and he's seen it before. I personally don't have abilities like he does, but sometimes when we're investigating and we're somewhere that has a portal, you know, where spirits can come in and out of, this thing will come out and taunt us, and it'll do a pig squeal. And, you know, I pay no attention to it. Like, it came through a couple weeks ago. We were on a case in Easton, Connecticut. Yeah. You know, it said New Jersey. You know, the pig squeal came through, and I just said, I'm not dealing with you tonight. I just give it no recognition anymore. This thing messed with me for a while. And I think something evil manifested there, because there was stories of mob hits years ago happening there. I remember hearing when I was in high school from an art teacher of mine who was friends with a police officer in that town that they had found a decapitated head in there.
Yeah.
So these are all things that the demonic love, and they want to just flock to the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get all your stupid kids that go there and do Ouija board sessions and shit like that. So it's not helping the situation, but yeah, Borg's Woods.
Not exactly not exactly the place you'd want to take a nice romantic moonlit walk in the evening with a loved one.
And there's people that have no idea, and they're walking their dogs through there, and boyfriend, girlfriend walking hand in hand. It's like, if you only knew.
Well, do you think that this is something, it's a location that will only open itself up to those who are, I look at individuals and their sensitivity to the paranormal, like on a sliding scale of 1 to 10. Like, one is, you know, everybody's at least a one, where that's like, I'm in a room and somebody really with bad, shitty intentions comes in and you just kind of get that feeling. You're like, I just feel uncomfortable, but I don't know why. Ten is like, I can see a full blown apparition in the room that no one else can see. And then you got everything in between there. So when you're going through a situation like that and you're in a woods like that, do you think that you are just somewhere on that scale of sensitivity that's higher than one, and others around you who also have those experiences are much higher in sensitivity level, and you're able to pick up on those things while the people wandering through with their dogs hand in hand are at a one essentially, and they, you know, that's a woods. So there's, you know,
yeah,
there's that
absolutely level,
but they're not getting anything other than trees.
Yeah, I mean, I've completely opened myself up to the spirit world.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even tell you how many haunted locations I've been at since I started doing this and all the investigations. So I'm, you know, it's the intent. You know, I never want anyone to get hurt, but you don't want to have a dud of an investigation either.
Sure.
You want something to happen, some type of activity. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, people get hurt. And you know, I think a lot of times, too, when it comes to situations like that, and maybe, you know, what is that person doing in their personal life? What secrets do they have? Why would something demonic target this person?
Sure.
That's a whole other conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, so, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be going back to those woods anytime soon, only because I live in Connecticut now, and it used to be like a 10-minute drive when I lived in Jersey, and now it's like an hour and 10 minutes. So
sure, kind of changes it up a little bit. When you're on an investigation, and obviously today and by, hell, by the time this airs, there'll be like five new paranormal investigative tools that are on the market, but it's always changing. There's always new things and interesting things that are being tested out. And I see nothing wrong with that. I'm not shaming that or anything. But let me just ask you, of the tools that are out there that are being used, are there ones that you would consider more dangerous to use than others? For example, I've heard things like a spirit box almost compared to a Ouija board in terms of...
I used to think the same thing.
Of what it can bring in or what it can't bring in. Give me your thoughts on that. I'd love to hear.
Well, all right. Me personally, I would never use a Ouija board, and I would never use dowsing rods, because what you're doing is you're literally asking the spirit to channel themselves through you and manipulate the planchette. I would never use a Ouija board because you never know what's coming through. I mean, that's something Ed and Lorraine Warren always preach. Most of their cases are because of Ouija boards, and that people are having demons come through. And again, dowsing rods, you're asking the spirit to basically channel through you and move these things. And I think those are dangerous. That's my personal belief. I would never use them. As far as equipment I like to use, my favorite piece of equipment is the PSP7 spirit box. I love ITC research. I've gotten some really great responses out of that thing. And the fact that you could hear a spirit speak to you in real time instead of like an EVP session where you got to stop, go back, listen, excuse me. It's just a really great tool. And I mean, the fact, a lot of people think it's nonsense because you're like, oh, it's sweeping radio frequencies. Yes. But if you ask a question like, I want to speak to whoever, Bill, and then it says Bill, how are you going to tell me that's out of the radio station, especially when it's sweeping over like X amount of stations and it's coming through? That's just, and I think that also enhances activity too when you're using the spirit box. So I use the spirit box all the time, and sometimes, you know, I'm looking at all my equipment right now. I'm actually going on an investigation tomorrow night, so like everything's laying in front of me right now. REM pods, laser grids,
let me tons of
different EMF detectors.
I want to ask this though, because from and like I said, I don't do investigations. I just host the shows and talk to everybody. But it's interesting because then I kind of get a little piece of everybody's world too, and I can kind of mesh it up and go, what about this? What about that? So when it comes to you said, you know, a Ouija board or the dowsing rods, you're asking it to manipulate something. Are you not doing are you not doing the exact same thing just in a different way with a spirit box, asking it to manipulate the audio, asking it to manipulate what's going to stand out?
I used to think that.
Okay, what's the difference though for you? Because that's what I want to understand. I'm not doubting you believe it's different. I just want to understand what it is.
So like, you know, the Ouija board, you're sitting there and your hands are on the planchette.
Yeah.
And you're literally asking a spirit to channel itself through you.
Yeah.
And to move that planchette.
Okay.
And that, I just think it's dangerous. Whereas if you're using a spirit box, you turn it on, you tell the spirits, I'm holding a device that you could speak through, and they manipulate the white noise and they could talk through it, where you wouldn't be able to hear their voices if we weren't using this box.
Okay.
And I just, you know, but I totally get what you're saying, because I used to have this conversation a lot.
Yeah.
I used to be scared to use the spirit box at first. I'm like, well, what's the difference between this and a Ouija board? But, you know, it makes sense. I mean, you sit down, you put your hands on the planchette.
Yeah.
You're asking a spirit to channel through you and move that planchette that's in your hand.
Is the difference that you're not asking the spirit to technically move through you to manipulate that radio? You're just asking it to manipulate the radio?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Here's another question, and maybe you don't know the answer to this. I don't know the answer to this, but here's something that comes to mind. When I'm in my storm shelter, I'm in Arkansas, so we have tornadoes and crap like two times a year we have the seasons. When I'm in my storm shelter, I have like an AM/FM radio, and to get in the signal better, and any of us who are our age remember like listening to the top 9 at 9 on the radio back in the day too, and sometimes if the station isn't coming in good, you would like put your hand on the antenna of that boom box and it comes in better, because it's you are becoming part of the antenna, and it pulls in the signal better. So any of us over the age of, you know, 35 remember doing that at least once in our life, and we know that works. Does or could that almost be the same sort of thing that could work to enhance your responses using a spirit box? If you're holding it, you know, using yourself as the antenna, as opposed to it like sitting on the table next to you.
Huh. That's a good question. I never thought of that.
In that way, in that way, you are also, I think you put yourself back into that Ouija territory though, if you do that, because then you are using yourself as part of the antenna to gather, to pull that in. So that's, I mean, I'm just throwing all these things out there because it's so interesting.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Or you could put something else on the antenna.
Yeah.
I'm remembering tinfoil on the antenna back in the day.
Yeah. To enhance the antenna, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you could artificially do it, I would imagine, in a way, but I wonder if, but the ultimate antenna, the one that worked 10 times better still than the foil, was our physical bodies.
I don't think I would do that.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, it's something to think about. I mean, statistically, I wonder, you know, if you get more responses, more audible responses, more sensical responses, if you're holding the box in your hands versus it's sitting, you know, somewhere next to you, what would you find to work better? Best practices, essentially. I don't know the answer, but it's a curious one.
Well, that's the thing with this field. I mean, you could do this stuff your entire life, and you'll just more questions. It's endlessly fascinating. I love this field. I really do.
Let's close in this, and this is something that I'd love to get your take on and really kind of your advice on for the audience. We've been talking a lot about darker spirits, demonic things like that. And the cases that you've been on that you believe were truly demonic, when you look back on those cases and you look back on, okay, where did this begin for these folks? I want you to kind of paint a broad brush here, because we could obviously go into specific cases and say, well, in this specific case, this person did this and this is why this entered into their life. But in a broader brush way, someone who's listening out there that may feel, hey, there's something dark going on here. This isn't Uncle Lenny. This is something else. You know, what would you say to someone who feels like maybe something like that is going on, but not to the point that they need to have it exercised, but they like to tamper it back to the point of it maybe leaving their world? What would you say to them?
Really, just at first, just try to ignore it. Don't give it recognition, because that's what it wants at first, and it'll feed off that, just like it'll feed off fear. If it is something that is possibly demonic and it's starting to get really bad, you know, it could be dangerous. And unfortunately, they're going to have to find someone to help them. And it's not easy, because you can't just roll into a church and ask a priest. A lot of the times, priests won't want to deal with this stuff. There's like a handful of priests that won't do this type of work. They don't even want to acknowledge it, which that's a whole other conversation. That makes no sense to me at all. Yep. Like, are you kidding me? So, yeah, I would say, try, you know, unless somebody is really getting hurt, just ignore it. Don't give it any acknowledgement, because they will feed off that. And just depending on their religious beliefs, too, you know, say prayers. But you gotta really believe in what you're praying. You can't just say prayers and think it's going to go away. And the same goes for like using holy water. You know, I tell people this all the time. It's not like a magic potion. You've got to truly believe in what you're doing. It's not just like, I'm going to splash holy water and they're gone. You have to truly believe that what you're doing is going to work, and that this is real.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with Eric Vitale. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program and discussing his world and his investigations with the paranormal. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support, and thanks for listening.